Right, let's begin then. Okay, let's all take a moment. First and foremost, to pay homage to the most magnificent one, the Supreme Buddha, reminding ourselves that we are privileged to have this opportunity to work towards our salvation, to work towards a state of mind where we are free from suffering once and for all, thanks to his boundless compassion, his limitless sacrifice, his kindness towards all sentient beings. It is that we are here to celebrate. Let us also remind ourselves that we have taken upon ourselves a pledge of allegiance to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, as we know these represent our refuge, our destination, and the path to that destination. Let us remind ourselves that that is what we are here, not just as devotees, not just as upasakas or upasikas, but as human beings on the surface of this earth. That is why we were born, that is why we shall live, and for that cause we shall die. With every ounce of energy in ourselves, with every beat of our heart, with every breath that we take, this is the purpose of our existence, to salvation for us and all. Let us take this moment to remind ourselves the profoundness of what we are here to achieve. Shall we bring our palms together then in veneration of his holy name as we chant the Namaskar.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
I certainly have the most esteemed privilege today, as a member of this community of the Sangha, to witness all the effort that each and every one of you makes for this noble cause, for that on many occasions I have done, I do, and I will continue to do, almost sometimes every other week, sometimes even once a week, when I go and see my teacher, I tell him, "Venerable Sir, if there's one thing that I have to thank you for, it is for bringing me here and for giving me this opportunity to be in the presence of this noble community." Like I told you yesterday, no, last week, seems like it, feels like yesterday. It is not that I am here to build this monastery up. I'm not here to make this monastery. This monastery makes me. Everyone in this monastery is the monastery. It is not the pagoda that stands up tall as if its objective is to bound the sky with the earth. It is not these buildings. It is not the Dhamma hall. It is not the Avasa. It is not any of the physical things that you see around you. It is actually the people. Because even if everything were to collapse and you all were there, standing upright, dedicated and committed to this cause, then within each and every one of you is a little monastery. Don't you feel it within yourselves? A little monastery? Whereabouts do you feel it? Yes, of course. Do you not feel it beating? Relentlessly? Aspiring with every beat to try and get yourselves to salvation? Courageous and brave in the midst of all adversity? It's not always easy, I get that. It's not meant to be. Nothing good is ever meant to be easy. If it were, everyone would be doing it, right? Why is it that most people do misdeeds? Why is it that most people misbehave? Why is it that most people do unmeritorious deeds and very few actually do good deeds, the good things in life? It's because the good things are never easy. It's not meant to be. But if you actually think about this, the world is always in equilibrium. The world is always in a state of balance. It has always been, it is today, and it will always be. But Buddhas come and go. For every Buddha that comes, and a Buddha comes, you know how often? How often? Every weekend, right? Every few eons. Many eons pass when there are no Buddhas, and then once in a while, not once in a blue moon, once in many, many, many moons, you get a Buddha. But the majority of the time that we have spent on this earth, all of us, we have spent without a Buddha, which is what we call the Abuddhasa period, where there are no Buddhas that grace this earth. So when there's no Buddha, there is the Mara and his regime. He is king. In fact, he thinks he's always king. This world has to exist because the Buddha has come to non-exist. But you see, these two things, they work in unison. The Buddha and the Mara, they work in unison. It's almost like they've come to a pact of some sort, but they never told us about it. It's like a little bit of a conspiracy. What the Buddhas never taught you. It's like they have an MOU, a memorandum of understanding. It's almost like they work together to keep this world in balance. The Buddhas come, not very often, very rarely, but when they come in and then they create the community of men and women. Then there are Devas and there are Brahmas who are also products of engaging in this practice. There is no other way that you can actually achieve such level of grandeur as a Deva or a Brahma. You have to be compassionate. There's no other way. You have to be generous. You have to be charitable. You have to be selfless. You have to be giving. There is no other way to become a Deva whose name itself is synonymous with giving, isn't it? That's why they're called Devas. To deva is to give. That is what it means, to give selflessly. So the advent of devas and brahmas themselves is because of the Buddha's ministry. So that is the good side of the world. And then there is the evil side of the world, which of course is the Maras. In one sense of the world, sense of the word Mara. Because of course a Mara is responsible for both good and bad, because the Buddha's purpose is not necessarily to make this world a better place for all. His purpose is actually to extinguish the world once and for all. But these two forces, they act in balance. And you see, although so many Buddhas have come and gone, they have come and passed away, they have arisen and they have passed away, this world still continues, doesn't it? This world existence as we know it, that has always continued, and it will always continue. Now, as we know, the next Buddha to come is the Maitri Buddha. Then there will be a Buddha after that. Plenty of Buddhas have come and gone. So despite these Buddhas coming in and spreading the Dhammas, establishing their ministry, the world as we know it still exists. There's still the good stuff, there's still the bad stuff, there's evil people, there's good people. There are the Devas, there are the Brahmas, and there are the Pretas and the Sattvas in the four great hells and so on. It's kind of like these two forces work together, the Buddha and the Mara, to keep this world in equilibrium. So really, if you look at it that way, the only constant is that this will always be there. The world will always exist. So what is your purpose then? To extinguish existence. You are simply an energy. By now you have begun to understand that. You are simply an energy, but this is not refined energy. This is defiled energy. This energy that you are seems to think that you are. Yeah? You believe that this energy that you are is you. So therefore you have given identity to this energy. Just think of you as a packet of energy. You are an aggregation of energy. Right? Your chitta is an energy. So this is an aggregation of energy. This energy seems to think that it is you. You have given it identity. That's why you feel it is the who? The self. That's why you feel it the self. You have given that identity to a bit of energy. That's all. Fortunately, you don't do that to this light. Or movement. Or the heat that you feel from the sun. You don't think that that is you. But that is also energy. But then this energy that is the mind, you feel that that is yourself. Because of course the mind can think whatever it wants, right? But fortunately you don't feel that you can give identity to light energy. You don't feel like you can give identity to wind energy or kinetic energy. You don't feel like you can give a label or an identity to, say, potential energy. But they're also energies. But this energy that is you, do you understand what I mean? This energy that is you, because you are nothing more than energy. You're just an aggregation of energy. This bit of energy that you are, you have given it an identity. And that identity is self, because that is the only place onto which you can attach ignorance. See, you can't attach ignorance to this light. I'm pointing at a bulb, but what I mean is actually the light energy that comes from that. You can't attach any identity to it. But the energy that you are, you have given it an identity. Now, you're all on a quest to attain Nibbana, aren't you? So, if you really think about it, what you're trying to do is to eradicate jati. Yeah? That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to eradicate jati. So there's this energy that you are. You're just a ball of energy. Think of it as a bit of energy that's just pulsing all the time. That's not how it looks like. Making it a bit dramatic for you. So this bowl of energy, which you are, you have given it an identity, and now you call it the self. This is what you feel as a self. You see, on your practice here in the sasana, all that's going to happen is, this energy is always going to be, but your identification of it as a self, that is going to cease. That is what we're trying to eradicate, not the energy itself. What evidence do we have of this? Remember, Buddhas have come and gone, but the energy is always there. So the energy is constant. It's there. When a Buddha comes into this world, there are some collections, aggregations of energy which have given itself an identity as a self. This identity, I'm going to draw that in red. This is the layer of identity you have around this energy that you are. Right? So this gentleman here is like that. Let's take another gentleman. Let's take a lady as well. We have to be fair, don't we? You tell me what a lady is now. So we've drawn two gentlemen and a lady. Can you see that? Fortunately, you were in the room when I drew them. Because if you weren't, and you walked into this room after I had drawn it, and I asked you which one's a lady, which one's a gent, you wouldn't be able to tell. So we have two gentlemen and a lady. What's really there? What's the absolute truth? There's just energy. This is all there is. Remember, I'm just drawing a representation of energy. It looks nothing like this because energy has no shape to it. Right? Can you draw light energy? You draw something like this. You might do. But remember, that is not light energy. It has no shape. This is simply a graphical representation of how energy works. It's a propagation of energy, right? It's simply a graphical representation, that's all. This is not what energy looks like. You can't draw what energy looks like because it has no shape. But you know that there is something inside you, don't you? Something that is not your physical form. You know that something's there inside you. This consciousness that you are. The ability. That's what energy is. It's the ability to do something. Don't you have the ability to do something special that, for instance, this cannot? Energy is nothing more than the ability to do something. That is what energy is. The energy, the ability to move, we call kinetic energy. The ability to do to illuminate. There you go. That's called light energy. The energy to heat is called heat energy, and so on. Now, what do you feel that you can do that this cannot do? What is it that you can do that this cannot do? Think. Yes, absolutely. Isn't that an ability? So, the ability to do something is what?
Energy.
That is the energy I'm talking about. Now, I'm not simply talking about, let's say moving your arm, right? I'm talking about thinking about moving your arm. Because whether you had your arm or not, you can still think about it. Say, one of your arms got amputated. You can still think of moving it, but you just won't move. Because this requires chemical energy. This is physical energy. So I'm not talking about moving up and down. I'm not talking about walking. I'm not talking about speaking. I'm not talking about jumping. I'm talking about thinking. Pure thinking. Consciousness. That is energy. But for some reason, you seem to give it an identity. What about the ability to give something an identity? What about that ability? Where does that come from? Have you seen this ever do that? If I break this in half, do you think it's going to weep? Do you think it's going to be afraid that I might break it? Why? Because it can't construe fear. Doesn't make sense. Fear doesn't make sense here. Grief doesn't make sense. Because these are all products of the power of thinking, isn't it? So we are putting you on the dissecting table, right? I'm slicing and dicing and chopping you up into fine pieces, and I'll give it back to you, don't you worry. You can take it back home with you when you go. But I want you to understand who you are. And then you will realize that you're sort of identifying yourself in a way that you are never meant to be. That is the problem. What is the problem? To be your? Not to be, right? Okay, I won't give up my day job. These jokes are not working on you. I'm quoting Shakespeare. Yes. From Hamlet. Sorry. Try something else. This is you. Are you prepared to accept that this is you? You may not feel this way. That's okay. Right? Each and every one of you might feel that, I'm a man. The other half of the room will feel I'm a woman. That's okay. But are you willing to accept that you cannot be that? Because you're simply the ability to think. What else are you? Like I said, you might be moving around. Right? So when we used to learn about living things and non-living things, do you remember? When we were at school, our teacher said, this is a non-living thing. And then we distinguish living things from non-living things by their ability to do things, right? So we said, living things can breathe. Living things eat. They walk and they talk and so on. Living things can think. Non-living things cannot do any of those things. But this can write, can't it? Well, this can't write. Yeah, you can use it to write. But this can't write. I mean, it's not going to write for the next 100 years. It's just going to be like that. But what are you? What special ability have you got? It is the ability to think. So the movements that come after that comes after the ability to think. Because you have to think to move first and then move. So we have the power to manipulate energy. So I was going to ask you the question, this is you, and then there's this shell around you. This shell separates you from these things, you see? So where has the ability to put this shell around itself come from? If consciousness or the ability to think is you, if that is you, that is you energy, then where does this come from? Yep. That is also the ability to think, isn't it? You can think out of ignorance, you can think out of wisdom, with or without ignorance. You know, this is the only ability. So thinking is the only faculty that can happen with or without ignorance. It's the only faculty. Do you think light can work with or without ignorance? Do you think there's a right way and a wrong way for light to work? What do you think? Is there a right and a wrong way for the wind to blow? You might not like the fact that the wind is blowing against you because you're feeling too cold, or you might like the fact that it is because you're feeling warm and you feel the breeze. That is your personal preference. I'm not talking about that. I mean, objectively, is there a right way and a wrong way for the wind to blow? If there's an area of low pressure and there's air in an area of high pressure, then of course it's going to blow. That's what we call is wind. There's no right or wrong way for wind to work. Wind just works. Yeah, gravity. Do you think there's a right way and wrong way for gravity to work? No. But when it comes to thinking, there's a right way to think and there's a wrong way to think. The only ability that can be done right or wrong is the power of thought. See how much of a responsibility you have. Because you have great power. I want you to rethink yourselves. This is engineering again. You know, we've done engineering, we've done civil engineering, we've done aircraft engineering, we've done computer engineering, we've done electrical engineering. Have you ever done U engineering? This is what that is. We are re-engineering ourselves, our thought processes. That's where the whole thing went AWOL. This is where it went wrong. We have to re-engineer the way we think. So when you went to university, you studied about how buildings were made, and then you called yourselves a civil engineer. Then you learned how the human body works. You called yourselves a medical engineer, in other words, a doctor. Then you learned how aircraft work, and you called yourselves an aeronautical engineer. You learned how rockets work, and you called yourselves a rocket engineer. Here, we are at university. You're here to graduate. We don't know when that's going to happen, but hopefully it'll happen while you're still alive. You're here for your university course, aren't you? So there are two things you have to do for this course. You have to earn lots of merit, which is how you pay your fees. This is not a free course, by the way. You earn your merits, and that is how you make your payments. And in return for your payments, you get tuition. And you thought the sermons were free. There's no such thing as a free sermon. You thought I'd say lunch. There's no such thing as a free sermon. Sermons don't come free. How come? The best things in the world, how can they come for free? You think mother's love is free? On another day I would say it like that, but not today. You think mother's love is free? Mothers in the room who have dedicated themselves to their children, right? You doted on your children, right? You completely sacrificed yourself towards your children. Do you think your child got that for free? No, of course not. To deserve a mother like you, you think that came for free? So is there no difference between your love and, say, a stepmother's love? If you gave 110%, which is something you cannot do, if you gave 100% of yourself to your child, that could not have come for free. Nothing in this world comes for free. Everything only comes to you if you deserve it. And the Dhamma is the same. At this university, we give tuition, but that tuition comes at a cost. And the cost you pay by earning merits. That is what I said right at the start of the sermon. It's wonderful to see how each and every one of you is making an effort in whichever way you can towards this cause. Now, yesterday I had the good fortune of walking towards the school. So from once in a while, I get myself up and walk that way. I just do it to rejoice. You know, it just makes, there's nothing really I do. Honestly, I really don't do anything in this monastery. I just make myself busy and just, you know, walk around treading on people's feet. That's what I do. I just get in people's way. So I take a stroll once in a while, go and see what they're doing at the school. I go and see what they're doing at Noble Hearts, young children. I go and take a walk and see what our Anagarika Mahatmyas are doing, what our Anagarika Mahatmyas are doing, what our Swaminarayanas are doing, what our Svira Shavika Manios are doing, what our Vesis are doing. It's just, as I said, I am so grateful to my teacher for bringing me here. Even if he didn't feed me, that would still be okay. Because, you know, this, I couldn't have got any other way. Just the opportunity to be here and look at all this goodness that's going on in this world. You know, those days it used to be that I had to watch TV. I had to get around and out, right? Driving on the streets, I used to see how, you know, I used to see road rage. I used to see how people get so furious, right? Little things seem like unforgivable sins. Something so little, something just like, you know, someone pulled up in front of someone and that seemed like a diabolical sin. It had to be punished. So they had to pull up, get out of their cars and do that. Not all five of them, just one of them though. Oh, I've seen that plentiful, but ever since I walked in through these gates, no. There's no anger to be seen, no hatred to be seen, no jealousy to be seen. It's just love for mankind. That's why I so strongly believe that if there's ever paradise on this earth, then this has to be it. But once again, it is not the pagoda. We couldn't say this before, but now we have one, so we can say that, right? It's not the pagoda, it's not the Buddha shrine room, it's not the Dhamma hall. It's not the kitchen, it's not any of these things. It is the little monasteries that you have in each and every one of you. That's what it is. You know, once this becomes a monastery, this is going to look like this. This is a monastery. Your effort is to try and build a monastery within this. Still, you know, it might just be a barren land, right? But you started construction work. Perhaps you are still laying down the foundations, some of you. Maybe you started putting up the walls. Maybe some of you are now building the roof. You build the walls high up, now it's time to put the roof on and the chimney. Maybe you're tiling the floors. Maybe you're doing the landscaping. Right? All the construction work is done, now it's just a bit of landscaping to do. Perhaps, you know, you'll all be somewhere on this journey. Depends on how far you have built this monastery. You know, this line will have begun to thin. And then eventually it will become something like this. To whom does this belong? No one. So to whom does this belong then? Still no one. Still no one. But the problem is, you think it does. Because that is the power of thought. The only thing that can work rightly or wrongly is thought. Nothing else can work wrong. When you open a tap, there's no wrong. You know, if water comes out of the faucet, you can't say that's right or that's wrong. Right? If there's water and there's high pressure and low pressure here, as you turn the tap, the water will start flowing. Whatever it is always right. For instance, if I were to let go of this pen and it didn't drop, it would still be right. Because there has to be some other force acting on this, which we may not be able to see. Maybe an invisible force acting on it. Right? But when it comes to the mind, the mind is the only force in this world that can act out of ignorance. Nothing else. That's what I said, you know, think of what responsibility that brings. Because with great power comes great responsibility. You have the power of thought, ladies and gentlemen. Whenever I speak to our people, our Swaminarayan says, Anagarikas and Anagarikas, I always remind them, never underestimate who you are. By who you are, what I actually mean is, never underestimate what you are. That's what I really mean. What are you actually? You are the power to change the world. That's what you are. You are the power to change the world. For the better or for worse. Trees cannot do that. The rivers cannot do that. The sun, the moon, and the stars, they cannot do that. Because they don't have the power to do that. They don't have a responsibility. They were just put there. And now they just serve their purpose, that's all. The sun, you know, the sun cannot all of a sudden think, you know, I'm spinning the wrong way. I should stop and start spinning the other way around. The sun cannot do that. The earth goes round in its orbit. You know, the earth can never think to itself and think, you know what? Once a year, maybe I should do it the other way around. The earth cannot do that. Because it has no power of consciousness. It cannot be aware. This is what consciousness is. It cannot be aware of what's going on. It cannot be aware of goodness or badness. But you can. And, you know, honestly, take this seriously, folks. I'm talking about the power to be aware. It's not a little thing. Because, you know, once you are aware, you can do something about it, right? When you are aware that the kettle is on and the water is heated up, now you can do something about it. But if the engineers who designed the kettle didn't design it in such a way that when the water heats up, it stops itself, it wouldn't. It would just continue to keep boiling. That's how you know it's a faulty kettle. When the water has all evaporated, but the kettle is still working. And then it's going to go up in flames. That's a faulty kettle, because a kettle can never be aware. Please don't underestimate the power of awareness, because it is what you are. You are aware. Some of you are mindfully aware. This is your sati. The power of mindful awareness. Not merely mindfulness, not merely awareness, but mindful awareness. People talk about mindfulness a lot of the time. People talk about awareness. Science will teach you about awareness, how we can be aware of things. Then they'll talk about mindfulness. It is often marketed, in the realms of Buddhism, mindfulness. But I speak of a different kind of awareness. I speak of mindfulness and awareness together, where you can be mindfully aware. So you're not simply aware, but you're aware with purpose. You are the power of thought. That is what you are. This is the power to illuminate. Energy is the power to do something. What are you? You are the power of thought. How about I ask you to stop defining yourselves by the name you give yourself and actually think of yourself as the power of thought, the power to be aware, the power to make a mindful choice about something, to choose to not turn clockwise but stop and turn anti-clockwise, if that is what is going to do good to the world. This is sound like quantum Buddhism. I'm speaking of a philosophy here. I don't think this is the primary school where I need to teach you don't kill. Please don't kill. Come on, that's not good. Don't steal. This is not primary school, is it? This is university. I like to think of this as university. You know, this is where I come to stretch my intellectual arms, my intellectual muscles, and have some fun. I enjoy this audience. I hope you enjoy the speaker. I want you to start to think about the world in a different light. You know, just think about this for a second. We've all lived our lives for the best part of our lives, right, with the exception of these young children. With that exception, most of us, we've lived our lives thinking that our purpose was to be a mother to someone, a father to someone, a girlfriend or a boyfriend to someone. Look at how small our worlds were. You know, when you think of yourself as the other half, or the better half, or the worse half, whichever half you are, right? Ask the other one, he'll tell you which half you are. Okay. You know, in those moments, just take an individual chitta, right? Take an individual chitta, and in that chitta, if you think you are a mother, how sad. Because that's all you are. Do you understand what I'm actually trying to get across to you here? Or did I just get off the wrong side of the bed today? In an individual, you're nothing more than an individual chitta, are you? In this very moment, freeze time, what are you? An individual chitta. An energy. One pulse. That's it. Right? In this individual chitta, you will never be what is going to come next. You never was what you were a moment ago. What was a moment ago. You are what you are now. A pulse of energy. That's it. In this pulse of energy, you like that effect? Yeah, good. In this pulse of energy, if you feel that you are a mother, how sad. Look at how much you've undermined yourself. You are the power of thought. You are everything. You are energy. The power to do absolutely anything. And yet you think you are a mother. When you are a mother, you are simply a person or a self or an individual that's committed towards a child. That's all you are. See, being a good mother is good, but it's not greatness. This is university, remember? I'm not here to teach you how to be a good mother. You must have come past all that now. I'm speaking to Anagarikas. I'm speaking to the Srafikas. I'm speaking to the monks here. Come on. I'm not asking you to be a good father. Then we are in the wrong class. If that's what you came to hear. I'm not asking you to be a good father. Now, once in a while I'll tell you to be a good father. You know, when it's like New Year's Eve or something like that. But here, you know, this is quantum Buddhism. You can call it Buddhism if you want. You can call it whatever you want. This is the truth. This is quantum reality. This is the quantum truth. Come outside of your box where you think you are a mother. Step up to greatness. You are good. You are good for as long as you are a mother. That's as far as you can go. If you are a mother, you can be, the best you can be is a good mother. How sad. On Mother's Day, we'll celebrate being a good mother. But today is not Mother's Day. I don't think it is, right? So let's not talk about how to be a good mother. Come here on another day, on Mother's Day, we'll talk about how to be a good mother. And let's celebrate the fact that you're all good mothers and good fathers. And I'll give you a pat on the back, right? And whatever. But here, we are here to talk about quantum truth. I want you to step outside this box that you have put yourselves in, where you think you are a good mother, because I say, how sad, how pitiful. Why do you limit yourself to just considering yourself to be a good mother? Because in that moment, here is a moment in space, time and space, here is a moment in this universe, an opportunity to be whatever you want, an opportunity to be everything. To be free, to be limitless, to be free, to experience liberation. But here you have put yourself into this box and you are saying, I am a good mother. That's all you can be. If you are a mother, the best you can be is a good mother. If you are a father, the best you can be is a good father. If you are a doctor, the best you can be is a good doctor. Once again, you have limited yourself. I'm asking you to step outside the realms of mundaneness. Aspire to a higher truth. This is the quantum truth. You are not any of these things that you think you are, ladies and gentlemen. Look at this. You see a mother here? Did you see a mother here then? No, but this shell around it, this skin that surrounds it, that is created out of ignorance and attachment, makes it believe in a split moment that it is a mother. You know, the next moment it'll think it's a sister. So when you think you are a sister, now you are committed to a brother or another sister. You're committed to a sibling. That is all you are. You know, mothers and fathers in the room, they can really relate to this because you have, I think you have experienced what I'm talking about. I have not been one, but I can imagine what it must be like because now I have understood how the mind works. When you think of yourself as a mother, in that moment, if you freeze time, there is nothing else in your world besides you and your child. Those are those special moments that you say, those moments I share with my child. You know, maybe the day you held your child in your arms. Maybe the day you gave up your child to Noble Hearts. Maybe the day that you cherished, you know, your child's first birthday. Right? And you held that child. You have just elevated me to the status of mother. And you told yourselves, how lucky I am to be your mother. In that moment, that's all you could be. And here, we are talking about a chitta that is limitless. When a chitta could be infinitely limitless, you know what you did? You collapsed all that ability, all that potential down to just this one little thing in this world. A grain of sand in comparison to a mountain. You limited yourself to such a little thing. Something so minuscule. Remember, I'm not undermining motherhood by any chance, right? I cannot because I myself am the child of a mother, right? So, I'm not undermining motherhood, and mothers are good. There are wonderful mothers. It is because of mothers that we are all here today. Your mothers were brave and courageous enough to give you up, even if they had many plans and goals and dreams for themselves. Right, and even if they imagined a life with you in it, they were so generous and boundless in love and compassion to give you up so that you can go and do whatever you wanted in life. And that is why today you are experiencing freedom. Perhaps your mother is still at home cooking rice, but you're here now. So I'm not undermining motherhood. I would never do that. What I'm saying is, if you are still a mother, you're not doing justice yourselves. You're not doing justice to yourself. And mother is an example here. If you think you are a husband, in that moment where you think you're a husband, ladies and gentlemen, you limit yourself to that. Because in that moment, all there is in your world is you and your wife. If you are a wife, then in that moment, I'm talking about an individual chitta here. In that moment, all you have there, if you are a wife, you and your husband, that's all. But we are talking about a limitless chitta which has potential for limitless compassion. See, the difference between you and a Rahatan Vahansi is an Rahatan Vahansi doesn't even think that he's a Rahatan Vahansi. He doesn't segregate himself. He doesn't limit himself because he's limitless. Because he is a pure chitta. This, do you see the limit that goes on? This is the boundary. This is the boundary to which it can pulse. It can't pulse outside of this. It can't reach beyond this. It is bound by the ignorance and attachment. This is as far as it can go, because that is the wrapper that you have put around it. Do try to come out of it for your sake. For the sake of everyone around you. For the sake of mankind, for the sake of humanity. Ultimately, I'm just talking about you anyway. I don't know whether I'm speaking at a level that is at odds with whatever ways in which you think about the world. But I think there may be at least a few people who can understand what I'm trying to say here. I see you in a very different light. You are sitting down here, as I look upon you, not look upon you, that doesn't sound right. When I look at you, as I look at you, I can see infinite potential. That's what I can see. And then I ask you, who are you, madam? So I'm in answer, I'm a wife. And then I go, what a pity. Because that is not how I see you. I see you as a free chitta. How far can it reach? Limitless. How much can it have within itself? How much compassion? How much room can it have for others and for everyone? Limitless. But when you are a wife, only you and your husband. When you are a mother, only you and your child. See, this is why when you are a mother, you always give first preference to your child. See how the world is at a disadvantage whenever you feel that you are mother to a certain child? The world is at a loss. You are a chitta. Who does this belong to? A child? Think about this. If you are a chitta, if you are simply energy, who does that energy belong to? Who does it belong to?
Nature.
Nature, exactly. It belongs to all. So if something belongs to everyone, it doesn't belong to anybody, right? Who does the air belong to? Exactly. It belongs to everybody, meaning it doesn't belong to anybody. Who does light belong? Who does the sun belong to? The sun god. The sun belongs to everybody, meaning it doesn't belong to anybody. That's why we are all at liberty to use it as we wish. There's no one who's going to come and tell you, no, don't you stand that much outside in the sun. Because you're not allowed to do that. No, the sun is there. It's there for all of us. In the same way, you know, how about you start thinking of yourself, this power that you are, this energy that you are, in the same manner. Think of yourself as a sun for a second. This sun, I mean, not the selfish kind, the boundless kind, the limitless kind. That's what I see in you. That's why I speak to you in this manner. To elevate you up to a level that you may not have even imagined yet. I always tell you, you know, you and I, we have the same potential. You and I, we have the same potential because we are all energies. This energy that we have, you know, this energy that comes through the wire, okay, that is what we call electrical energy. That electrical energy, it can do absolutely anything. It can turn a fan. It can light up a bulb. It can heat up the cooker, can't it? It can make the wheels of your car go round. It can do absolutely anything. Use it for whatever, it'll do that purpose. The electricity that comes through your wire does not come and say, hey, I'm just here to light the bulbs, not here for anything else. It doesn't say that. It's not like when you pay your electricity bill, you pay some for the light, some for the heat, some for the water heater. You don't do that, do you? You just pay one electricity bill at the end of the month. Because electricity is there to be used for absolutely anything. It does not come saying, I want this, I want that, I want the other. No preferences. Therefore, it is limitless. Limitless in purpose. Limitless in potential. It's versatile. Can be used for absolutely anything. How about you? I ask you, how about you? I'm a bhikkhu. Use me for anything. Are you a mother? Are you a mother to your son? Then you cannot be used for absolutely anything. You can be used to serve your son, or at least who you think is your son. That is all you can be used for in that moment. In that moment, your potential is so limited that you become a very small part of this world. When you have the power to be all, that is God. I don't want to bring God into this conversation because that will confuse the heck out of you. Let's leave him out for a second. But that is God. Leave that out. But that is God. You know what they say, God is everywhere, right? Yeah? If you take out this wrapper, you are everywhere. This might sound like something out of a science fiction movie. It's not. I'm sharing with you the truth I feel about this world. Practice the path and you will understand the same. You'll perceive the world in the same way. I am nobody, ladies and gentlemen, today. I'm nobody. I am not a mother. But I can be like one. But I'm not a mother. I'm not a father. But I can be like one. If that is what the world needs, in that moment I can be like one. I can take on the guise of a father without even feeling that I'm a father. See, with great power comes great responsibility. I can take on the responsibility of a father, but not be a father. Because I have the power. I'm limitless. Are you? Or are you still a father? A father to this son? Are you a father to a son? Or are you simply the responsibility to a son? Which are you? I'm not a teacher. And neither am I a student. But I can be a teacher. And I can be a student. If that is what the world needs. If that is what is needed, that is what I can be. It's like the electricity that comes through the wire. Is it heat energy that comes through the wire? But can it not take on that guise? Is it electrical energy that comes through the wire? No, but can it not do that if needed? All you have to do is connect it to the end of a light bulb and on comes the light. Connect it to the end of a kettle and it's on. Now it's heating water. Connect it to the end of a battery terminal and it's now charging a battery. But this is just, it's versatile. It can be absolutely anything depending on what we humans decide to use electricity for. But it never comes through the wire saying, I am here to light the light bulb, son. But if you are a mother, you will walk into the room saying, where is my son? I'm here to feed him. Where's my son? I'm here to wash him. The rest of you lot, get out of the way. That's my son. Don't you touch him. See, you limit yourself. If you want to become limitless, you have to step outside of this circle. I don't know if this is making sense. It makes sense to me, so I'll just continue, okay? If it doesn't right now, just record it and leave it. Someday listen to it and it will make sense. When you are ready to hear it. Once again, that is not meant to undermine anyone. Oh, I respect you. I respect you all a lot. Because as I said, you are a wonderful audience for me to speak to. Not every audience can I speak like this because it will not make any sense at all. This will sound like Greek. But I know in the audience somewhere, there has to be at least someone who can understand this. Maybe all of you can. In fact, maybe people here, some of you understand it more profoundly than the sense in which I relay this. Perhaps that is even true. But I want you to start thinking of yourself as this. What are you? The power to be anything you want to be. That is what you are. You are the power of thought. Think and you are. That's it. Isn't it? If you want to be a pen, what should you do? Don't you remember when you used to do stage drama at school? Yes. When you wanted to be an elephant, what did you have to do? Think. Can't you think of yourself as an elephant right now? You can. Don't, but you can. Right? And then one arm comes forward, the other arm goes underneath that. Right? And there's your trunk. Now you're an elephant. Remember when you had to do when you played you had playhouse, yeah, and you had your cutlery, you had your utensils, you cooked. There was nothing in it though, but you cooked. then you were a mother. Then you had your teddy bears. They were the children. And then you cooked and you gave it. You fed them. You served them into their plates and you offered it to the children. Right? In that moment, you were that. Because think and you are. Think and you are. It's like a magic wand. Abracadabra. And you are. We are talking about the power of thought, folks. The power of thought. The power of thought is limitless. It's boundless. A thought can do absolutely anything. A thought can levitate you. A thought can do that. A thought can make you vanish. You can change the elements. The power of thought. It is a thought that can have supernatural powers. Irdi. With the power of thought, you can levitate. With the power of thought, you can go underwater. Meaning, with the power of thought, you can change the basic construct of the four basic elements. You can change their composition. Meaning, it's the power to do absolutely anything. That's what it is. That's why I say it's God. Leave that out. I really need you to come out of your closed thinking. Get yourselves outside of this box. How do you do that? Anichadu kananatta. There's no other way. I don't see any other remedy that can help you step outside of this skin. This is a disguise. This is the veil. When you're walking down the aisle, you think of yourself as a bridesmaid, don't you? Just think about if any of you have walked down that aisle, right? As you walk down the aisle, you are the bridesmaid. You're dressed in the attire of a bridesmaid. In that moment, you're not a nurse. You're not a doctor. You're not a teacher. You're not anything else. You are a bridesmaid. So you are a bride. You are a bride in that moment. In that moment, as people are looking at you, right, they're at their tables, they're all looking at you. Don't you feel like they're all looking at the bride and that is me? In that moment, don't you feel like the center of the world? Everyone's looking at me because I am the bride. If you are the groom, the same goes. I am the groom and everyone's looking at me. Because you think and you are. But here's what I'm saying. Today, the Dhamma has helped me to step outside of that. I can be a groom if you want me to be. No imitations, please. But without being one, I can be one. I can take on the guise of a groom. That's what I mean. I can take on the guise of a groom. Without thinking that I am one. But I remember, I was a groom once. And I thought I was one. I wasn't just taking on the guys. I thought I was the groom of the day. And I thought the whole day was about me. I thought all of the festivities, all of the ceremonies, the drums beating and the dancers dancing and the visitors and the food and everything. It was all about me, I thought. Oh, how poor I was. How pitiful. Because you see, in that moment, what I'd given up, what I'd surrendered, was the potential to be infinite, limitless. This is simply anicca. It is only because of anicca this can be. See, this is simply a bundle of energy. It's just pulsing energy, that's all. Like adding a few ingredients, it can think that it's a mother. Because of anicca. But it is because of anicca, that's what I mean. It is not a separate mother. It's simply because of the ingredients that went into making it. That's all. A cake is cake only because of the ingredients that went into making one. Why else is it cake? Isn't that why you can ask the question, how do you make a cake? Please think about this. Isn't that why you can ask the question, how do you make a cake? Because what is cake after all? Yeah, It's just the ingredients put into it in the right composition. You know, put it in the oven for a little while, beat it for a little while, right? Do whatever you have to do. Knead the flour for a little while, and that is the cake. The cake is merely the aggregation of the various parts that make it. Each part contributes something. Each cause contributes something. You need some causes, you need some conditions. As the two of them come together, now you have the effect of a cake. If that is not anicca, what is? And if something is a product of anicca, then it cannot be a separate entity, can it? It cannot be something you can separate from everything else, because it's merely kept up by the forces that keep it there. It's not a separate thing. This pen is only up here because of the energy that is constantly being fed. It's not an in-the-air pen, is it? Do you understand what I'm saying, folks? This is not a pen in the air. Where is it now? If it's a pen in the air? Is this an in-the-air pen? Not India pen. In the air. Is this an in-the-air? Is this an in-the-air pen? Is it? If it's an in-the-air pen, what should be, even if I take my hand off? It should be in the air. But is it? No, it's not an in-the-air pen then. Then it's not an anatta. It's not an atta in-the-air pen. There is no separate entity of an in-the-air pen. This is simply the product of causes. And there are conditions. Causes and conditions manifest this effect of it being in the air. But that's all it is. It's not independently in the air. It's dependent. This dependence originates because of causes. This is a dependence that has originated and it keeps on originating. So you have dependent origination. I'm talking about this being in the air right now. This being in the air right now is an origination, and it is dependent on causes. Take out any one of those causes, it will no longer originate. Therefore, that effect cannot be seen. By seen, I don't mean seen. That effect does not manifest. Now take absolutely anything you want as an example. Take anything you want as an example. Aren't they all like that? Look at the ceiling. Do you think this is a in-the-air ceiling? Or above-the-wall ceiling? Do you think this is an up-above ceiling? Can it not be a down-below ceiling? Where's the ceiling right now? Up-above. Are you telling me that it cannot be a down-below ceiling? Or on my head ceiling? Can it not be? It can. So, is this then an up-above ceiling? What I mean by that is this an independent entity of an up-above ceiling? Is it? No, in which case, if it were, you should simply be able to take out the causes and it would still be an up-above ceiling. But one fine day, perhaps when you're all here like this, it's going to come crashing. Don't you worry, I'm the tallest one in the room here right now. So I'll be going before any of you go. In more ways than one. So this is not an in-the-air ceiling. It's not an up-above ceiling. It's just up-above. Because of causes and effects. But just imagine if this ceiling thought, like you do, I am an up-above ceiling. I am independent of all of these causes. I don't need the things that keep me up. I don't need the things that tie me up to the stress. I don't need any of that. Leave me alone. I can be on my own. The moment the last cause lets go, it'll be sorry it thought like that. Because that's going to come crashing down. See, is there any state in this entire world that you can think of? Any state in this area, be that physical or mental, or any other way, right? Is there any state in this world, ladies and gentlemen, that you can think of that is independent? Any state that is independent? So is there any state then that is not the subject of anicca? causal, conditioned? Is there any state in this world that you can say is an entity that is separate from anything and everything, that is independent? No, there isn't. So anicca and anatta are characteristics that is to be seen everywhere. Dukkha is the aggregation and the fact that it appears to be together. That is a characteristic of the external characteristic of dukkha. As an example, this pen, yes, you can see all of the parts that make that qualify this to be called a pen are together. So when I move this to the left, the whole thing moves to the left. When I move it to the right, the whole thing moves to the right. Because by nature, all of these causes, you know, they seem to appear to be together. You understand what I'm saying? The paddle, the nib, the cap, the lid, all of these things, they are together. Again, all because of individual causes and effects, right? The reason that this is here is not the same reason that this is here. The barrel is here next to the pen, next to the lid, or the cap, and the cap is here next to the barrel. Each of them have causes. That's why you can do this. These causes are separated to these causes. See? And you can then put them back. Now, these causes are separated to these causes, but there are how many causes that keep it like this? Give me a count. A rough estimate, an approximation, a rough estimate of the number of causes. You know, if you could do that, you'd be a Buddha. That is impossible. It is not down to us to work out all the causes. Yeah, that's not down to us. Science tries to make an approximation. Science tries to understand why things are the way they are. Yeah, it helps us to figure out some of the causes that we can manipulate. That's what science does. But there are plenty of causes that we cannot manipulate. If the sun is too hot, you can take shelter. Can you switch off the sun? Maybe turn the thermostat a little bit? That you cannot do because science does not show you how, because it is not within our reach. That you couldn't control the sun. But you can take yourself under a shelter. That you can do. That is what science helps us do. Simply to live a comfortable life. But there are an infinite number of causes. Is it really infinite? I don't know. Maybe one less than that, which is still infinite. But there are an infinite number of causes that manifest this product. And the fact that it's up here and not here, but it is here now. These are the causes. These are all the results of causes and conditions. The same applies to you. See, it's such a shame that nothing in this world claims to be independent with the exception of you. With the exception of you, nothing in this world claims independence. Have you ever seen the Amazon rainforest fighting for independence? Have you seen the lions, the tigers, the bears in the jungles fighting for independence? Right? This is the jungle. Here, the deer, they lived here. The tigers, they live here. But they roam. They also roam. They're hoping that they'd never bump into these people. These things think that one day they hope to bump into the others so they can feed. Right? And then there are the lions, there are the bears, there are the antelope. There are the giraffes and so on. But they never fight for independence. They don't say, you know, this land, it has to be ours. Of course, if a predator approaches, they will fight for safety. As a pack, they'll fight for their survival. Right? But when human beings go looking for independence, they're looking for independence from other human beings. It's very ironical. Human beings look for independence from other human beings. Have you seen a pack of giraffes going, no, we don't want to be with those giraffes. They're black. We are white. Have you seen the female giraffes fighting for their rights? Equal opportunities. You seen that? No. They will fight for survival. Yes. You know, just like we fight with the rain and the wind, right? For survival. But if you go one step further, in fact, take the non-living things. Because even animals have ignorance, right? So therefore they have a sense of self and therefore they have to protect themselves. But at least they are better than us in one way. That is, they don't fight amongst themselves for independence. They might fight to mate, right, for the right partner. They might, the alpha male in the pack may fight the others and show his prowess so that he can mate with his partner. That is another matter. But amongst themselves, they don't fight. They get along. In fact, the more the merrier, because it gives them safety in numbers. But human beings are not like that. See, do you think animals, they build houses within their community? Like, this is one den, this is the other den, this is the other den. And they make sure that those dens are built and they have a door in front of it so that no one can come in. And they put the walls around it. Why don't they do that? Why doesn't a pack of wolves try to keep themselves away from each other by separating themselves? Because they have no need for that. We claim to have such intelligence that we have not only separated ourselves from other beasts, but we also then go on to separate ourselves from each other. That is how much we cherish this identity that we are. And the only people you will allow into your personal space are the people that you have given permission to. So therefore, your family, they can walk into my personal space, but nobody else. But a pack of wolves, they're all my family. You tell me which one's more intellectually advanced. Don't, because that would be so far too insulting. But then if you take it even one step further, because animals can also be, you know, they also have ignorance. If you take it one step further, the trees don't do that. If you walk into the jungle, right, the trees are there. And you know, they're just there. You know, next to a mango tree, you'll find an oak tree. Next to the oak tree, you'll find a jackfruit tree. And, you know, they coexist. They're not looking for that separation. They're not looking for isolation. They are quite happy in the company of diversity. Because they don't identify themselves as separate individuals. Thankfully, they can't think. Just imagine if trees could think. Do you think you'd be able to have the garden that you have at home? What are some of the trees you have at home? You have a jackfruit tree. Maybe you have a coconut tree, a king coconut tree, another one. Then you have a mango tree. Maybe you have some pineapple trees. You have a jambu tree. Right? You have these trees at home. If they could think, keep them to the side. You have your friends, right? You have your friends. You have a gang of best friends, even your best friends. In the evening, what do? They gather, and then as daylight breaks, you disperse. And they all go to their individual abodes to be with the people that they really like. Not with you, okay? To be with the people that they really like, right? And then again, the following evening, they might get back together. Now, aren't you glad that your trees can't think? The banana tree, aren't you glad that it can't think? Because what would happen? You know, today you plant it. If it could think, by daybreak you come back into the garden, where would the trees be? They'd have all gone looking for independence. I can't be with this other banana tree. What are you, banana? They would. You know, two coconut trees, they wouldn't be able to live together. Because the coconut will be looking at the king coconut and go, you are king coconut, huh? Conflict. Because they identify yourself. They would, if they had ignorance and attachment. They would identify yourself, they would identify uniqueness. And then they'd want to be alone and separate. But trees, they understand anatta. They don't, but they appear to understand anatta. They appear to understand anicca. They appear to understand dukkha, which is simply the fact that, you know, we are simply an aggregation of matter, that's all. It's just the state that we're in right now. My king coconut today will be a coconut and the other tree tomorrow. The moment I let go of this king coconut, right, it's going to drop on the floor and it's going to decompose. It's going to become fertilizer to the tree just neighboring to me, and that is a coconut tree. And then 3 weeks later, it's going to be a coconut. The king coconut tree gets it. People don't. That's why they don't have turf wars. They don't fight for territory. They coexist harmoniously. So why is there no harmony? Why is there no peace? Why is there no union among people? Because they limit themselves when they could be infinite. See, a coconut tree, ladies and gentlemen, has infinite potential. You know all the things we use a coconut tree for, right? That you make brooms out of it. You use the coconut as food for food, and the various things you make out of it. It is used as for medicinal purposes as well. You use the leaves to thatch roofs and so on. A coconut tree is so versatile. It is used for so many different things. Almost like there's no tree that gets used as much, so much so. It's because it doesn't identify itself as an individual. You know, it's not just there to serve its master. Because a coconut you pluck from your coconut tree at home, it can be used anywhere. That's how you go to the shop and you buy a coconut. Because those coconuts were not born just for the master that planted. It's just there for nature, because they don't separate themselves. But as human beings who are ridden with ignorance and attachment, you identify yourself as a self, and that's why I said, in an individual chitta, whenever you sense that you are a mother, that is such a sad state to be in. Because perhaps what your child needs right now is a friend, not a mother. Aren't there times where you've experienced that? Maybe even you as children? You come back home, you've got some problems on your mind, and you want a best friend to share them with, and you meet your father and he's all a daddy to you at that time. That's not what you want from him at that time. Or you go walk up to your mother, and what you need is a friend, because you have some problems that you want to share, and you feel like you can only share this with a friend. But your mother just bees all mummy with you at that time, and you can't do that. Because she feels she's the mother. But take Ratanvansi. He's not a mother. But he can be one if that is what we want. He's not a father. But he can be one if that's what we want. He's not a friend. But he can be one if that is what he wants. If that is what the world wants. He can be a brother. He can be a sister. He can be absolutely anything you want. Because he simply responds to nature. Nature's call. Not that nature's call. He simply responds, though, to nature's call. It is because he doesn't have this wrapper around him. He has understood that he's simply energy. Energy responds wherever it is needed. That is how energy works. It just responds wherever it's needed. It makes itself usable wherever it's needed. So I want all of you to start thinking, at least start thinking, ladies and gentlemen, that you can aspire to this. Here's the first benefit out of this way of thinking. The first benefit is not to everybody else. Who is it to? It's for you. The first benefit of this, the first advantage, comes to you because you are free of suffering. When you put yourself around this shell, now if anything comes to you that is a threat, you feel threatened. Answer this question for me. When you are a mother, and someone comes and takes the thing that makes you feel that you are a mother away, what do? Yes? Mothers? Mothers? I have one, so I know. If the thing that makes you feel that you are a mother is somehow, you have the threat that it might be taken away. Because you see, this motherhood of yours is dependent on the presence or the existence of this other entity. And that entity in your mind is a child. In other words, really, ladies and gentlemen, if a child develops a fatal illness, if your child were to get cancer, okay, the first problem you have is not that the child will die. Where's the mother now? That's not your primary concern. It's not that the child will die. What's your primary concern? Then what's going to happen to me? I am a mother. Without the child, I am no longer a mother. Oh God. Because when the child dies, then she prepares to become a mother again, so that she can continue to be a mother. Take a moment to think about how the mind works. This is not you. This is just how this energy works. If you can think of it in these terms, like if you can take it in the sense I intended, it won't hurt you. Otherwise you'll feel like I'm stepping too close. You'll feel like these words are threatening. You feel, how dare, step away, Swami Nasa, this is my personal space, I'm a mother and let me be one. Don't wake me up from my dreams, Swami Nasa. Like Nanda Mani used to say. Sorry. But think about it. If your child is threatened, and the threat of death falls on your child, the first concern that you have is, I'm going to lose my status as a mother. Otherwise, why do sometimes parents, they hesitate to give up their children to the sasana, let's say? Why do parents hesitate to give up their children to the sasana? Because without the child, how do I know, how can I be a mother? Because it's only when I look at my child, I'm reminded that I'm a mother. Have you not heard parents sometimes weeping and, in their grievance, as at the funeral? It is you who made me a mother. Who do I call my child again? Who's there to call me Amma again? Sorry, I don't mean to be mocking. I'm just, because it's a very sad situation. But it is ignorance after all. I'll mock ignorance all I like. What's your problem? I'm not mocking you. I'm mocking ignorance. What's your problem? Are you ignorance? No. But this is what happens. So, if your other half, better half, worse half, whichever half, if your half comes up to you and says, I want a divorce, what is your primary concern? Maybe not now. Now you're like, hey, freedom. Freedom calls. I can become an anagarika now, finally. That might be the thought that crosses your mind now. But if you take yourself back, the average person, right, and the threat of divorce is looming, it becomes a threat because you want to be a husband. That's why it's a threat. That's why a person who wants to walk away from the relationship because he wants to get into another, for him it's not a threat, is it? And then if the other party comes and says, I want a divorce, and you're like, wow, I thought you'd never ask. To what do I owe this honor? Because that's when you want to separate. You no longer want to be referred to as husband because you want to be a free man. Just think about it. You got married. Initially, say it was arranged marriage. Say it was an arranged marriage, right? You just got married for convenience, okay? And you're living together, but you don't have feelings for each other. You're living together. And then one fine day you see this girl and you're like, wow, that's the woman I wanted. Now you want freedom. But she's only available if you are free. So now you don't want yourself to be referred to or to feel yourself as a husband who is trapped into this relationship. What you want is to be free so you can go and get into this other relationship, a new relationship. So when you want that new relationship, now you're looking for freedom. So now, in this self of yours, you now value freedom. You value freedom. Or just, I'll give you a more perhaps relatable example. There are times where we've had, on some occasions, young people who walk up to us and say, Swami Nansa, I got to hear your Dhamma, your sermons, 2 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, I got married, Swami Nansa. If only I'd heard this. 4 weeks ago, I'd be here. But now, I'm a married man. Because of them, you know, it's the power of thought. Now the mind wants freedom. But previously the mind wanted a partner. So what happens when the other half comes up with the proposal of divorce or the other half passes away? Then the primary concern that you have is my husbandness is now in tatters. I want to feel myself as a husband. Oh God, now how do I do that? So, you know, for the wives in the room, for the husbands in the room, right? I need you to understand this stuff. Understand it so that your commitments that you make to your other half, you know, make those commitments and all that, it's all good and well. But remember, today is not Good Wife's Day. Like, today is not Mother's Day. And so today is not the Good Husband's Day. Today is, we are talking about quantum truth. Right? So because you're talking about quantum truth, I need you to recognize the fact that your other half wants you to be with them so that they can feel that they are a husband or a wife. You're there to satisfy their ego. That is why they enjoy your presence, primarily. After that, it's the sights and the sounds and the smells and the taste and the touch that you give them. But satisfying their ego, that's the mind. That's the most ominous beast, the mind. Because that gives him manadhamma, the mind and the dhamma. The dhamma that makes him think that they are a husband, that gives him status, that gives him a status, that is what it gives him, the status of a husband. And then after that, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. Now what else can you offer your husbands? Ladies, what else can you offer them? Beside a sight, beside a sound, beside smell, beside taste, beside touch, and the status that they are a husband. Because you are willing to call them yourselves their wife, right? What else can you offer them? If you can't offer them anything else. Now let me ask the husbands also, equal opportunities. You have to balance this out. Right? Husbands, what can you offer your wives? Besides sight, sound, smell, taste and touch, and the feeling that they are a husband or the feeling that they're a wife. It's only a feeling. It's only a feeling. It's only a perception. Nothing more than that. Remember, they only exist in that chitta. When they are with their best friends, do they even remember you? Come on, wives. Come on. Speak the truth and nothing but the truth. Husbands, look away for a second. And plug your ears for a second. Right? When you ring them at night, And it's 11 o'clock. They have to be back for the school run the following morning. Right? Hello, aren't you coming home? Yeah, I'm leaving in 5 minutes. 1 hour later. Hello, yeah, I'm leaving. Five minutes. Because in that moment, they don't feel like they're a husband. No, they don't. Because a husband is a perception. Nothing more. In that moment, they don't even want to think that they're a husband. Because that is a burden to them. Because now they're with their friends and they want to be free. Honestly. I don't know whether I'm saying too much here, but this is the truth. This is quantum truth. You know, when, say, a bunch of friends, they get together, right? And they say, you know, shall we go out to a club? Shall we go out to get some drinks? And then you are happy to go with your friends. And you tell your wife, I'll be back before it's too late. Don't you worry. I'm faithful. And then you go out with your friends. And then you go to this club. I don't know how much I can say. Did you get that? I said it. In some clubs, they have dancers. Kandyan dancers. In some clubs, they have dancers. And these dancers, they approach you. Don't think I'm just making some lewd jokes with you. I'm actually getting across the point that, you know, you are just a chitta. Your perception of a husband or a wife or a mother or a child or a brother or a sister, all of this is simply in a perception. So I don't know what it is you can't give up. You think you are. You think and you are. That's it. You are nothing more than what you think. In reality, you're just infinite and limitless energy that has the capacity to do absolutely anything you want. But at this club, there's the dancer that approaches you. And then you think to yourself, if only I was a free man. I'd dance. And then there are some to whom it won't matter. They have no scruples. Unscrupulous. Then they'll choose to ignore, very conveniently, the fact that they are a husband. They will choose to conveniently ignore the fact that they have to be, any physical contact is only with their other half. Provided no one finds out. Then they'll take an oath they'll take a pledge. They'll get their friends to swear. Because here's the problem. If the wife finds out, now what's going to happen? Well, she's going to be heartbroken. That's the problem. No, what's the primary concern again? Yes. What if the wife decides to leave? That is the primary concern. If the wife decides to leave because she feels that the husband is unfaithful, because that relationship is bound by the terms and conditions of that relationship, one of which is you have to be faithful to me. Meaning, it's a relationship that expects, of course they're going to leave. Because an expectation is not fulfilled. A relationship can only last for as long as expectations are fulfilled. We've talked about this countless times, haven't we? You have a shopping list of things you want from the other half. I'm not offending anyone today, I hope. Am I? Is this too much? Let's talk about the hare and the tortoise then. So once upon a time, there was a hare and a tortoise, and they wanted to run a race. Now you're all smiling. Earlier you didn't have those smiles on your faces. What happened? dear sons and daughters who sit at the back of the room, aren't you so proud and happy that you are free from all this nonsense? Thanks to your parents. They were so kind and generous to give you up to the Sambuddha Sasana. And here are those parents. Today you don't have to go through this nonsense. Ultimately, in the end, to realize that this is all simply a perception. I was never a husband. I thought I was. But you see, I'm trying to prove a point to you here. In that club where the dancer approaches you, right? If you are a committed partner, now you have a problem, because if she finds out, or if he finds out, if he or she finds out, then you are in threat. You are under threat that they might choose to leave. And if they choose to leave, now what happens? Your status of being someone who's in a relationship, your status of being a husband or a wife or a lover, these things, it's at that peril. Because that is your primary concern. That status is lost. So that gets in the way of you enjoying that moment. But that's good, because at least you don't do something that you later regret. That's good. At least in that way it's good. Even if it's because of that, you remain honest and you don't do something that you later on going to regret. You don't engage in something unmeritorious. At least that is good restraint. But what I'm talking about is a chitta. You see, in that chitta, they don't really want to be your husband. That's the point. They wish that they were never married to you. In that moment, in that chitta, they wish that they were never married to you. But you get back home, and it's the following day, and then she brings you your bed tea. In that moment, you wouldn't wish for anything else. Now, where is the husband? Ladies, where is the husband? It's in a chitta. The perception of a husband is in a chitta. That's it. So the perception of a wife is in a chitta. And when you are in that chitta, when you perceive that way, when you perceive out of ignorance that you are this entity, you are this individual, you are this identity, in that moment you collapse your potential to something so minor, something so negligible, something so insignificant, that you no longer feel like you are part of nature. And then of course you have fear of loss, fear of disgrace, fear that someone might find out, see, fear of all sorts. That is why tanha jayati soko and tanha jayati bhaya. What else? Is it any wonder? See, tanha. When you are attached to this sense of identity, now you create a world inside it. And once you create that world, now you're always living in fear. What if someone might come and take some of what belongs to me in this world away? But remember, when you don't want that, when you don't want that identity, you take up another identity. That's what happens. You know, this can actually be the same chitta in three different states. This can be the same chitta in three different states. I've drawn the same blue ball surrounded by a different circle. It depends on what identity you want to take. So you've heard of split personalities? They say it's a mental disorder. Happens every day. You're always split. You extend your two hands. Your husband holds one, your child holds the other. Which one are you now? It depends which one you reflect on. If you think about the person holding your left hand, you're a wife. Think about the person holding your right hand, you're a mother. You can't both be one, or you can't be both at the same time. You can't, because it's in a chitta that you live. But ultimately there's just energy. That's all. You know, what the sasana gives you is an opportunity to actually become who you really are. None of this, you know, these are all pretenses. You're all actors. Cut it out. Identify the real you. Just be yourself for once. Cut it out. Cut out this nonsense. This acting. This is an award-winning acting that you have. If you are an official, right, whether it's in the forces or any other authority for that matter, right, as you know, just imagine when you were in your lay lives. I can say that now because most of you have left your lay lives. When you were in your lay lives and you were the senior person in the office and you walked into the room, what did you expect everyone else to do? Yes, stand up. Salute. Good morning, sir. You check, good morning.
Sir.
And what was your response? Morning. Because you were sir, right? So these were your subordinates. See? How do you know that that person is not a sotapan? But they're my subordinates. I am the boss. So they have to say good morning, sir. But I can get away with it simply by saying morning. Or that's enough as well, isn't it? Good morning, sir. Why? Because in this identity, in this chitta, what am I? The boss. And then you walk past your office, right, where you have your subordinates, and then you enter the executive wing, where you have your boss. So you walk into the room like this, right, as you walk into the office. As you approach your boss, good morning, sir. What happened? You stepped out of this shell into another. It's like changing clothes, isn't it? That's all it is. It's like changing clothes. How dare you call that your identity? On what grounds? Where's the reason? Where's the rationale? Where's the rhyme or reason? Where is it? You are just you in the chitta. Is that what you want to maintain? I mean, is that why you don't want to become... Again, wrong crowd. I was going to ask, is that why you don't want to become an anagarika? But then it's wrong crowd. I always think this to myself. You know, the people I want to talk to, they're not here. Even those who are here, they don't need to hear these words. Those who need to hear, they're not here. Always a catch-22. But hey, what to do? I'm almost listening to this online. Right, so is that why you can't let go of this mundane life and come into this noble livelihood, this noble monastic livelihood? Is that why? Where in here we are nobodies. I am not a senior monk. But I can take on the guise of one if that is what is needed from me. That's all I am. I can pretend to be one. But I am not internally, I am not a senior monk. I'm just a nobody. I'm like a mirror, I like to think. The mirror only shows you who you are. If you're standing in front of a mirror, it shows you your reflection. If you come close, it comes closer. If you move further back, it moves further back. If you step outside, it doesn't, you know, do you think it's going to somehow show you? No. And if you walked in, you know, to the other side of the mirror, do you think the mirror is still going to show you? No, it's not. Because the mirror only responds to whatever you want from it. If you want to see something closer, then you can move closer to the mirror and it'll enlarge it for you. If you don't want to see it that well, then you can move away. You can step back and the mirror will not make it prominent. That's how a mirror works. I like to think of myself as a mirror. So this object standing in front of you, that is the world and its expectations of you. That's what I mean by that. That is the analogy. The world and its expectations. People that you come across. If they want advice, they'll come up to you and ask, what about this one here? Other they put on some makeup and don't see any of my flaws, I don't want you to. Then the mirror won't see either. And if you really don't want to see it, all you have to do is step outside, step to a side, and the mirror won't show you in its reflection. See, if we can all be like that, just a mirror, it only responds to what is expected of it. But, you know, when the mirror shows, say the king, the king dressed up in all his jewelry, his finest jewelry, in his royal dress, he goes and stands in front of the mirror. How do you think the mirror feels? Does the mirror feel royal? Does it? No. And the next day a beggar comes and stands in front of the mirror. How does the mirror feel? Poor. No, the mirror is like this. It just responds like for like. What the world needs, it gives. The mirror does not take on a personality. If you can be like that, then you can take on the guise of a mother without being a mother. Just like the mirror shows the king, when the king comes and stands in front of it, it shows the reflection, the image, the mirror image of a beggar when the beggar comes and stands in front of it, right? It simply does its job. It simply serves its responsibility, sir. When the king stands in front of the mirror, remember, the mirror does not think that I am a royal mirror. It does not do that. When a peasant comes and stands in front of it, the mirror doesn't think I'm a peasant of a mirror. It doesn't. I'm just a mirror. I want all of you to aspire to be that. Just be free. But take on the guise when it's needed. Even when you're an arahant. I mean, after all, that is what it is. An arahant is that. If you are expected to be a mother in a certain situation, be one. Find out what they need. What sort of a mother do you want me to be? Do you want me to be a stern mother or do you want me to be a loving mother? Which one do you want from me? If they want you to be a stern mother, be a stern mother. If they want you to be a loving mother, be a loving mother. You respond to what the world needs. If the world needs a father, be a father. When the world needs a brother, be one. So you see, you can play all these roles without actually being them. Don't internalize them. That's the problem. How do you not internalize it? To answer that question, you need to ask this question. Where does the internalization happen? Where? Exactly. It all happens in the mind. When the mind is ignorant. See, we always say, right, when you start listening to these Dhamma sermons, let the transformation happen within. Externally, be what the world wants you to be. The Dhamma has to make the transformation within. Internalize the Dhamma. The Dhamma is anicca, dukkha and anatta. And then you will begin to realize that you are nothing more than Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara and Vijnana. That's all you are. How should Rupa be? Royal or a beggar? Internally, you are just that. But outwardly, do what the world wants you to do. If they want you to dress up like a queen, then dress up as a queen. So what? That's what we talk about. You need not let go physically. It's mentally that the letting go needs to happen. After all, today you understand it's not letting go either. It's to understand that there was nothing to let go. Because there was nothing to let go. This is what you were. In every situation, you are still the same. All that happened was, you just simply erase this wrapper around you. That's all that happens. It's a thin foil. Just take that out. Because this foil takes on a different one every time you become another identity. When you are a mother, you are a mother. Like I said, when you are When you're at the club and the dancer walks up to you, in that moment, the last thing you want to be is a husband. Because it makes you feel guilty and you don't like that guilt. If you're a good husband, you feel guilty and you don't like that guilt. If you are a promiscuous one, perhaps, then you don't care. Then you don't care. But you don't want your wife to find out either. But how is the wife going to find out? It's because you are a husband and she's the wife. If you weren't the husband, then there's nothing to hide. No matter who finds out. The same applies if you are, you know, if you are a child. That you are the son. You don't want your parents to find out certain things. You don't want your mother to find out. You don't want your father to find out. See, now you have to be very careful about what you do. Always living in fear. Because what if my father finds out? What if my mother finds out? I'm not saying that's bad, because that is good restraint. It keeps you good. Right? That is good. That is brilliant. And we need it. We need that. Until the mind is tamed, right? Fear and shame for bad deeds, misdeeds, evil deeds, and sinful things is essential. We need that. That's why we observe the precepts. So we take on shame and fear of bad deeds. Sabba papa sakaranang is that. You don't need to give that advice to an arahatan, one said. But until the mind is tamed, until sachitta pariyodapanang happens, you need that advice. It's good advice. But you know that there are times in life where you fear, what if my dad finds out? What if my neighbor finds out? What if my boss finds out? Sometimes, you know, people, they're at the workplace. You know, they're on the internet, they're using their phones, they're doing this, that, or the other. They're taking trips while they're in during their office hours, going here, there, wherevers. You know what those wherevers are. And hoping that the boss doesn't find out. Because in that moment, they are a worker. Is this bad? No, you need that restraint. That's not what I'm talking about. That restraint is required. At least because of that, people refrain from doing bad things. At least because of that. But that is not why people should not do bad things. Why? Because someone's watching. Oh, how sad. I'm good because people are watching me. I don't engage in sensual misconduct because people are watching me. Someone's going to find out and then that's going to be the end of me. People are going to burn me alive. Is that why? No, you're going to be burned alive anyway. Because they're watching from above. How can you hide them? Or hide from them? By they, who do I mean? The heavenly deities. No, I mean karma and vipaka. That's watching. You can't hide from that. How can you hide from karma and vipaka when you are the one who's generating the karma? You're generating it right now. So how can you hide from it? It's there. You're doing it right now. So that is the one thing you cannot hide from, because it's happening right now. It's there when you're doing it. You and karma is there when you're doing it. So there are two witnesses to every deed. Aren't there? You and karma. It's always there. Always two witnesses. Anicca, dukkha and anatta is your only refuge. Now you need to understand why this is. I hope it's helping you realize why anicca, dukkha and anatta are the only remedies to this problem. So like I said, it's good restraint to have. You're out of fear and shame at the very least. You don't engage in misdeeds. But you live in fear. Because you are now a worker. And there's the boss who might find out. This fear is not because you're going to do a bad deed. This fear is because of jati. It's because of this wrapper. But of course, the reason that you want to do this bad deed is also because of the wrapper. Let's say, you know, you are... Now, I remember when you used to be in the UK, there were some friends who got addicted to... Long story short, sometimes, you know, when people, they are in relationships, they travel to other countries and then they miss their partner. And then, because technology is very advanced these days, you know, there are various means in which you can satisfy yourselves. One of them are chat lines. You just ring a number, and there's a voice on the other side. They'll pretend to be anyone you want them to be. I hope I'm talking to a mature audience, not kids. Our kids are okay because they're with us. But if your kid's going home, then they had better not listen to this. And then they ring a chat line. Right? On the chat line, at the end of that, there's someone who pretends to be who you want them to be. I can't share any more detail about that, but that's what it is. You are intelligent enough to work out what might happen next. Remember, these are people who wish to be with a partner, but they are 1,000 miles away, and now they're alone, they're feeling lonely, they need companionship. So, I knew people who got addicted to this kind of thing, and they just couldn't come out of it. At the end of the month, they'd get themselves a hefty bill. They don't come cheap. A normal call, if you can make, like, say, 20 minutes, if whatever cost someone a 20-minute call, on that, you'd pay for 1 minute. They're very expensive. Because that's how they make their money. People make money out of other people's vexations. How else can you make money? People make money out of other people's vexations. So when there's someone who's vexed, and they're looking for some respite from the sensual lust that is burning them from within, now they need a helping hand. They need someone who lends an ear. So they'll get on the phone and they'll start talking, and the other people, they start talking this way, that way, this way, that way. 10 minutes later, and having paid a huge bill, then job is done, and you can come out of the phone call. And after that, you regret, because nothing's gained, except £100 on the phone bill, a conversation that has not been productive, nothing's happened, except merely sensual satisfaction, that is all in the mind. But people become addicted to this stuff. In fact, pretty much every magazine you pick up, every newspaper you pick up, most tabloids, that sort of thing, on the back of that, you have these numbers, chat lines. This is the people are advanced, aren't they? They're very sophisticated. If you want relief, we can give that. And they pretend to be whoever you want them to be. If you want someone to pretend to be like an under 18, people have all, you know, there are all sorts of things that they like. Their likes, their preferences, very diverse, right? Because it's whatever your drushti is. If you think that, you know, a young girl is preferable, then that is what you want. So then there's a number for that. You ring a number for a young girl. If you want a granny, then there's a number for that. If you want a pregnant woman, there's a number for that. But they're all pretending. Most of them are simply, you know, women who are retired. Sometimes, you know, men who take on a voice. They're voice actors. And you have technology these days. Even my voice can come out like a woman's voice. You just have to plug it through the computer. But you see, it doesn't matter who it is on the other end. Because, you know, when you're talking to that 18... Oh, this, and I don't want to say 18 minus, because our duas are 18 minus. That's how we refer to them. When you're talking to this girl who is below the age of 18, right? She's actually, maybe in her late 70s. In actual terms, she's actually in her late 70s. She's retired. She just wants some extra cash, some pocket money. And what she does is she serves on the phone line, a chat line. Right? But remember, this man who wishes to have the companionship of a young girl, where is this man created? Where is it created? In the mind. And where is the mind? On which end of the phone line? That end or this end? This end. So if the man is created on this end, the man who seeks the voice of a young girl is created on this man, this end, then where should the girl also be created? That end or this end? This end. So does it matter who's on the other side? No. So, because here's where the void is, here's where the problem is, and here's where the solution needs to be. Not there. If you're hungry, where should the food be? Here, with you. So when the mind wishes to be in the presence of a young girl, it does not need to be a young girl who's with you. You just need to think it. As long as you perceive a young girl, that's enough. If you want this pen, there are two ways in which I can make you happy. One, I can give you the pen. Two, I can give you this and make you believe that I've given you this. Either works. You would know, you would be none the wiser. As long as you believe that what you have is what you want, you're happy. That is how people make money out of your vexations. That's how a 75-year-old grandmother on the other end of the phone line can give relief to the man on this end of the phone line. Because he thinks he's talking to a 16-year-old teenager. And that excites him. That makes him happy. So where's the teenager? In the mind. So where's the man who wants to be the teenager? That's also in the mind. What a pity. And some people, you know, they struggle to make ends meet. And they struggle to win their daily bread. But because of their addiction, they can't give up. So whenever they take their paycheck home, right, before the end of the month, the money's gone. There's always month at the end of the money, not money at the end of the month. There's more month at the end of the money. That's what happens. So don't you think these people need refuge? Do you hate them? If a man walks up to you and says, I have lust, what is your response? How disgusting. You are despicable. Is that your response? It cannot be. If it is, then you are one of these. You are one of these where you think you are virtuous. You think you're holy. I'm the holy one. I'm the holy one, so don't bring me anything that is unholy. And you are the holy one. You are not this. You're not free yet. There's no monastery within you yet. Because if you are a monastery, then who should come walking through the doors? Anyone. Sinners. Let them come walking through the doors, because I am a monastery. Once again, it is not the pagoda. It's not the shrine room. It's not the Dhamma hall. I see a monastery within you. That is why people walk up to you. And that is why we teach our young children the Dhamma and the language as well. I don't know whether this has started to happen in Sri Lanka yet, but if not, it will soon come. These chat lines. I don't know if it's already available. If not, it will be there, because any old rubbish will soon cross the oceans. People's vexations, if they don't have the Dhamma, then they need some way to relieve themselves from vexation, don't they? That's how we have the TV today. That's how we have the internet today. That's how we have the telephone today. That's how we have Chinese food today. people's vexations. They need to be relieved. I mean, is Sri Lanka a country that has no variety in food? Huh? How many food items do you know individually, just alone, just you as an individual? How many food items? Mothers in the room, right? You could cook every day of the year and make a different dish, couldn't you? So why do we need Chinese then? Not the Chinese. Chinese food. Why? Vexation. Why do we need Indian food? Why do we need Mongolian food? Why do we need Japanese food? Why do we need an English breakfast? Vexation. See, so is it not obvious that giving what the mind wants is not the answer? Where do you end? You know, soon enough we'll need lunar food. Lunar food? Food from the moon. Because Chinese food will not be enough, Indian food will not be enough, Japanese food will not be enough, we need lunar food. Then we need Martian food. We will. The reason we don't have it on the menu yet is what? Because we can, we don't know that they have food up there yet. That's why. You know, people scour the depths of the oceans to bring oysters so people can eat. Do you know how risky this oyster, harvesting is? It's one of the riskiest jobs in the whole world, harvesting oysters. But people do it because that is what a vexation is. If there's a vexation, if there's a will, there's a way. I like to rephrase that. Come on. If there's a vexation, there's a way. If there's a vexation, there's a way. If you're talking to a 75-year-old grandmother, but your will, your vexation is to talk to a 16-year-old girl, there's a way. You just close your eyes and you pretend. In fact, you know, that's why most people, when they indulge in sensual desires, they close their eyes. It's easier to imagine whatever you want. You can think of it in any example you want. I'll give you one that I can in a civil setting. Have you seen when people eat something? Have you seen when they show them on adverts? Right? They're a piece of cake. How do they normally display this? Why do the eyes close? Think of this. Here's a flower. Yes? Yeah. Why did the eyes close? Perfume? Why did the eyes close? Imagination. Because your mind can create rich and vivid imaginations. If you don't like what you see, it's okay, you can create it. I talked about taste and smell. You can think the rest. You've seen enough to know what else is out there. In moments where people like to indulge themselves in sensual desires, they tend to close their eyes. So it's not your face they see. Aha. Checkmate or what? Once again, I'm talking to the wrong crowd. That's the thing, what to do. But like I said, you know, no holds barred. I'd love to talk to this audience because I can talk freely. Maybe 5 minutes of this sermon you can probably put online this week. The Namaskara. So in case I forget to do the Namaskara, please remind me, because otherwise we'll have nothing to put from a Saturday sermon. Don't you feel an immense sense of joy that this is the nonsensical fantasy of a world that you have come out of? Monks, venerables and the almost venerables, Anagarikas, Shravakas and Sadhikas and Vaisis, Upasakas and Upasikas. Is it worth all this, all that? Was it worth it? If you wanted to be a mother, you had to imagine you were one, because you're not. And what happened after that? Fear, grief. And you thought, even when in those moments where you thought you looked at your child and you went, but that moment I cherish when I look at that cute, cuddly little thing. What about those moments, Swami Nuhansa? Yes, pleasure is simply relief from vexation. Once you get that into your head, then what else is there? What else of value is there? As the Buddha says, the only reason that people keep going through in samsara is because of this pleasure. But the reason that people come out of samsara is because they understand the fallacy of pleasure and begin to realize the consequences of going after it. I mean, it's a double whammy. It's not just that pleasure is fake, but there's also the consequences. There's also the consequences. Not just one. Yeah? It's not just that pleasure is fake, but there's also the consequences on top of that. I mean, if it was simply that pleasure was fake, but there are no consequences, we can perhaps make our minds up. Harmless pleasures. But they're not harmless pleasures, they're all harmful pleasures. All harmful pleasures. Then just take a very simple example. When you think you like cake, right? Have you not seen people stuffing themselves with foods that they're not supposed to be eating? But they keep on doing that, keep on doing that, keep on doing that, until they're too big for themselves. And then along after that comes the heart attacks and the pressures and the blood sugars and all this and that and the other. And people suffer. See, not just that cake has no pleasure, but there are the consequences. I mean, if it was simply that cake was, you know, there's no deliciousness in cake, it's just cake, but you don't have the consequences, the baggage that comes with that, then at least we can make our minds up. We can forgive ourselves, but not so. That's why I say it's a double whammy. How grateful are you for the Sambuddha Sasana? The truth, reality, to our teachers who opened our eyes to see things as they are, to the teachers who woke us up from our dreams, the nightmares that we used to live in, thinking that I was a happily married husband, and then there was a wife, and then there was children, and then I'm a brother, and I'm a sister, and this is my mother, and this is my father, these are my friends, I'm a community leader, I'm the boss, and these are my workers, my colleagues. It's a make-believe world. It's a crazy world. And people suffer. And then we wonder why they suffer. Because they keep wondering, because they don't see an alternative. Until you come across the Buddha's teaching, as I have said this 100 times, and I say it for the 101st time as well, until you come across the Buddha's teaching, there is no alternative. There is no alternative. There is no other alternative. Find me one if you can. That was not something that was uttered by the Supremely Enlightened One. Find me one if you can. Find me one philosophy that gives you respite from this suffering. They'll teach you how to live a good life. Like I said, a good mother. A good mother gives herself to her child. But in that moment, she's only a mother. She has limited herself to motherness. That is all she is. She cannot think of herself as a sister. She cannot think of herself, you know. Have you not seen sometimes sisters falling out because of children? You may have experienced some of this in your own families. Sisters, you know, they were siblings, they shared the same womb. They met each other before they met their children. They've lived with each other for the last 35 years. But now, because one sister feels that the other sister mistreats her child. Mistreats who? Her child. Now, those sisters split up. I never want you to set foot in my house again. Out you go. Don't you ever come back. If that is how you treat my child, then I don't want any longer to consider myself your sister. And then a rift in the family. Why, is sisterness not holy? Is that not sacred? Is sisterhood not sacred? Is it only motherhood that's sacred? Isn't brotherhood not sacred? But this is what happens when you think that this is my son, my child. And then if someone does something bad to my child, then over my dead body. See, in that moment, you forget that you are not a sister in that moment. In that moment, you are just a mother. That's what I'm saying. When you put yourselves into these boxes, you are that. You are a mind in a box. I'm asking you to step outside that box. Out of the box thinking in the business terms. But this is, I mean this in a more profound sense. Think out of the box. The box that you create for yourselves. Now, this is not just some old jargon. Think outside the box. This box that you have created for yourself. Because then you limit your capacity, you limit your potential, you become a very minuscule, insignificant thing, when in fact you have the power to be limitless and infinite. This is where infinite compassion comes out of. See, when you are a mother, ladies and gentlemen, you have compassion towards your child. Okay? When you are a brother, you have compassion towards your sibling. When you are a son, you have compassion towards your father. When you are none of them, who do you have compassion towards? All. Infinite compassion. Because it doesn't stop with your brother. It doesn't stop with your mother. This is what happens to people. I'm here. This is my mother. Here's my father. These are my siblings. These are my friends. But here are next door neighbors. These are neighbors, colleagues, and then outside that, people you don't know, the unknowns. Your compassion only spreads so far. Where your mother is concerned, if they get in the way of your mother, then your compassion only spreads so far. You are prepared to do any amount of harm to them, your neighbors, to protect your mother, because she is your mother, and your compassion only spreads so far. This is the boundary of your compassion circle. Is it limitless? Is it infinite? No, it's very finite. It has its boundaries. How can you say sabbe sattha bhavantu sukhitattha? How can you say siyalu prana bhuten kiri hitanukampiyo katitukan? How can you say any of that? You can say it without actually meaning it. You see, because when you spread your compassion this way, in that moment, you are a son. You are a child. When you spread compassion this way, you are a child. These are your siblings, right? When you start spreading compassion this way, now you are a sibling. This is a different circle. Not the previous one. This is a different circle. In that moment, you are not even a child. When you start spreading compassion towards your friends, Don't people fall apart, fall out of even family relationships because of friends? Even that happens. Like if my brother won't let me be with my friend, if my mother won't let me be with my friends, then I don't want her anymore. People fall out because of, you know, relationships. If I can't get married to the woman I want to be with, then I don't want my family. See, it all depends on how far you spread your compassion rings, and then depending on that, what personality you take on. You take on those personalities. This is why I call these are split personalities round the clock. You're always in a split personality situation. Even in your dreams, you're in a personality. In your dreams, when you dream of something, you are someone in that dream. And then you start spreading your compassion rings this way. Colleagues, neighbors, but always them before these guys, the unknowns. These are strangers. Yeah? Who would you serve first? Your mother or a stranger? The answer is obvious. Why do I even bother asking the question? It's a mother before the stranger. What about siblings? Siblings before the strangers. I don't mean about the virtue that they have. That's not what I'm talking about. Right? As a mother, of course, they are more virtuous in their relationship to you. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the persona that you take on. When they become the object of your consciousness, you take on a personality. That's what happens. So when you're up here, then these people tend to come last. But who's there more in the world? People you know or people you don't know? People you don't know. The people you know, you could probably count in a day. It may not even take you a day. You could probably count in an hour the people that you know. But the people you don't know? But aren't you willing to always care about these people more than you care about the people you don't know? So where's your compassion then? Can you actually say that I am compassionate towards all sentient beings when actually they will always come after these people? Yes, of course. That's why I call it dirty love or dirty compassion. It's not pure. Because this is always limited by the boundary that you set to yourself. You know, you can't go past this perimeter. This is the boundary that you set to yourself. But if you can come out of this, now they're all the same. Remember, it's not about who they are to you. It's about who you are to them. Inside of you, who you are. Who you feel you are. It's who you are that determines who they are to you. First of all, you have to take that on. Before you go and ask a girl out, you have already become a prospective partner. No? Before you walk up to someone and ask, hey, can I have your number please? Have you not already in your mind become the person who wants to be with them? At least be friends with them. Yeah, so you see, that's why you take on that persona first, and then you approach them. That's how you make friends. You first, you know, you become that initially, and then you expect the same from the other side. That's why when they don't give it to you, you're disappointed. When you ask, what do you expect them to? Concede. You want them to reciprocate. You want them to give whatever you ask. So in your mind, you have already become someone who is deserving of it. You think you have. That is where the expectations come in, and that is where the disappointments fall. So, do try and step outside of this. How? Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta, as I've explained to you. All of these are merely energies and their manifestations of energy. You are simply an energy, a pulsing energy. That's all you are. A pulsing energy. That's all. But this energy can take various forms. Add in the spices, add in the ingredients. Take on the guise of a mother. Don't become one. So to all mothers in the room, I invite you. Take on the guise of a mother from here on if you can. Without being a mother, take on the guise of a mother. To all fathers in the audience, I invite you. take on the guise of a father without being one, so that no matter who comes up to you and expects a fatherness from you, you can give it. See? That's what I'm talking about. Our Anagarika Mahatmya's house, Ilashavika and yours. Right? When they go to the noble hearts and they look after the children, they may not be biological mothers. Those dreams they gave up long time ago when they wanted to actually become mothers to all. Now, whichever child walks up to them and wishes motherness, they give it. That's taking on the guise of a mother. But they can go to sleep at night, not worrying. Because they are not a mother. They take on the guise of a mother. But a mother who has become one, they can't sleep at night. They live in fear. That is why today one Mahatmya goes and she is the mother. Tomorrow another Mahatmya goes and the one who went previously, she has no problem with that. Shall I say that again? Today one Mahatmya goes and she is the mother. Next day another Mahatmya goes and she is the mother. This one has no jealousy. This one has no problem with that. But just imagine if your child walked up to someone else and said, Amma. Just imagine for a second. If your child walks up to another woman and says, Amma, that will tear you to pieces. You know, every mother wishes to hear the words Amma from her child, looking at her in the eyes. What if she said that to a nurse? Or a random woman? No, you want that special moment to enjoy for yourselves because you are a mother. Who suffers? The mother who thinks she is one. She suffers. But take one Mahatmya, another Sivasarika Mahatmya. Right? One of the noble children comes and says, Mani, you are like a mother to me. You are my mother. She says, okay, Buddha, have you done your homework? Are you well? Are you keeping well? Are you being virtuous? Have you observed till today? Yes. Okay. Right. That's his head, walks away. Another Mani comes the following day. And he walks up to her and says the same thing. She doesn't watch the CCTV cameras to make sure that he didn't go around saying this to everybody. That's dirty love. Because, you know, it doesn't matter what they are to me. It is what we can be to them. Because they want a child to always have motherliness. You know, if you're happy for your child to always have motherness, then it doesn't have to come from you, does it? Let's be honest. Today you're here, tomorrow you won't be. But the problem is, while you're here, at the very least, you don't want others to give that, have that bond, have that connection with them. It gets even worse when it gets into love relationships. What my partner expects from me, she better not expect from anyone else. But what does she want from you? Happiness. I don't want her to have that from anybody else. See how selfish that is? Yuck, isn't it? I want her happiness to only come from me, not from anybody else. Is that love? Who do you love in that situation? Her? No. Yuck. Honestly. Understand these things and come out of this shell, this prison that you've locked yourselves up in, and become a man of the world. Belong to all. Don't belong to one. Belong to all. I belong to all. I am whoever the world wants me to be. I'm not a father, but I can be one. I'm not a mother, but I can be one. I'm not a brother, but I can be one. I'm not a sister, but I can be one. I'm not a friend, but I can be one. I'm not a teacher, but I can be one. I'm not a beggar, but I can be one. I'm not a king, but I can be one. I can be anything the world wants me to be. Because I don't have a preference. I don't have a way or a way, means in which I want to be. Once your wantings start to disappear, there's nothing you want to be. Next up is, what do people want? More than that, actually, what do they need? Not what do they want, what do they need? So just because someone walks up to you and says, "Can I watch TV, please?" That's what you want. But what you need is a Dhamma. Sit down. "Can I have a chocky, please, Puta?" Although that's what you want, that's not what you need. Sit down. First listen to me, then I'll give you the chocolate. Then they walk away. Half for somebody else, and the other half for me. So like I said right at the beginning, I'm very happy. I have the esteemed privilege and the greatest honor of being in your company. Thank you. I thank my teacher no end for bringing me here and giving me a taste of paradise. This is joy, this is bliss. On this side of Nibbana, I would want nothing more. It is because I can see a monastery in your hearts. You're building that. Keep at it. Build the best monastery, the greatest monastery that the world has ever seen. Make it inclusive so that anyone and everyone can walk in through those gates. Not exclusive. Anyone can come in. Kings and mere peasants. It matters not. We don't check who they are. If they need me, they can come in. Have that boundless compassion in your hearts. Remember, the person who benefits most from that is you yourself. Because, last thing I'll say is, the other day I met a gentleman who asked me, his worldview is one that is very, he believes in the physical world. He doesn't believe a lot about the supernatural or, you know, anything that he cannot see. So he was asking me, "Sir, the heavens, do they exist?" So this is the first encounter, not listen to the Dhamma a lot, but he's asking me, "Sir, the heavens, do you believe in it? Where is it if it is? If it's there?" I said, "Yes, sir, I believe in the heavens. It's right here." Why do people go to heaven? To be what? Happy. If people go to heaven to be happy, where there is happiness, what should that place be called? Heaven. "Sir, I'm very happy. So I believe in heaven. I'm in one. I'm in heaven." You can't deny that. Now tell me, no, heaven doesn't exist. Prove to me that heaven. Prove to me. Understand the Dhamma, there you understand heaven exists. So may you all enjoy the bliss of heaven, the peacefulness of heaven, the serenity of heaven, the tranquilness of heaven. It's not where we are doing nothing. It's where we do everything and be okay with that. May heaven be with you. Let's transfer the merits and bring today's sermon to a close. Let us take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, inviting the Swami Mahasi to deliver the sermon, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds and creating a conducive environment for all to come and practice the Dhamma and aspire to their Nibbana. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in the presence of the Noble Triple Gem and to have the association of the bhikkhus and the bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial projected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your sides through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to my teacher Guru Swami Nuhanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters and grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees and our friends and our teachers, those who made every effort to help make our lives peaceful and comfortable in every way, shape or form possible and available to them. Those who've helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form, may they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, and primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfilling and preserving the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who passed away in our names, our loved ones, our forefathers and our ancestors, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life as we do and practice the path in peace and harmony. Let us also transfer these merits to members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives in the wars, be their friend or foe. Let us also transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires and floods, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, friends and acquaintances to us, and reminding ourselves of the great service that they have rendered to all of us. And out of compassion and loving kindness and an abundance of gratitude to all of them, let us transfer these merits to all. May they all rejoice in these merits. And if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits that we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahants on this blessed land, and may you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a Rahatan Vahanse or an Arahataranin Vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnen midatnva Dvesha ginnen midatnva Moha ginnen midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva dveshagini niveva, mohagini niveva, nivansata labeva, nivansata labeva, nivan sapaleva.
තුන්වන්ගේ සූසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බැලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුගතදර වෙත්වා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.